No matter what you ride or drive, it's all about taking it outside. So get on your bed, load a scooter, and ride. This is Outdoors with Wheels with Lynn and Donnie. For best results, mix thoroughly with dirt. Add adrenaline, then shake. Really well. And now, Outdoors with Wheels. Here's Lynn and Donnie.
Good morning and welcome. I'm Donnie Stewart.
And I'm Lynn Beckwith. And you're listening to Outdoors with Wheels Radio. We like to say it is the radio show with Roost. Whatever outdoor activity you enjoy the most, we are hoping to inspire and encourage you to get away from the television set, away from all of the different media devices that seem to rule our lives these days, and get outside, enjoy some time with your family, and hopefully visit a forest.
That's right. Take the family out in the good old outdoors and enjoy some motorized recreation. Now is absolutely the best time of year to be out there.
Yeah, you definitely want to get out there before all the triple-digit thermometer readings come about here in a couple months.
That's right, and it's just nice to be out in the forest or out in nature in the springtime before everything gets all crazy overgrown, when it's still nice and tender, and it's just a magical time out there. And accordingly, there are just about a gazillion different off-road and outdoor activities in April, so you pretty much have to decide which three you're going to ignore on each weekend before you can figure out which one you're going to do.
And a great place to find outdoor events is Two Wheel Texans, an online forum, TWTEX.com, and you will find something happening most every day of the week.
And if you're a local Houston off-road rider, you might go to Old Dudes on Dirt Bikes as well. They keep a pretty good roster of events happening over in the forest.
And if you're looking to travel outside the state, ADVRider.com is a great resource too.
If you're more of the motocross racer type, I think there's an awful lot of guys hanging out over on TUN. That's Texas Off-Road Network.
Now that was a really confusing message we just sent. First we say, get away from the media, and then we tell you to go look at it. So look at it, find a really great event, and then get outside.
There you go. Use it as a resource, but don't stay there all day noodling around. Get outside and do the real thing. You can noodle around all night.
Now, if you're really ready for a great adventure, a great dual sport ride up to Arkansas, there's an opportunity to hit the Arkansas 500, and it is coming up next weekend already.
That is right. It actually starts next Friday. And we'll run through the entire weekend, and it is a very well-planned, ongoing event. I think it's in its seventh year this year, and they take all of your camping gear, put it in an enclosed trailer, haul it from site to site, so you can ride without all the burden of having to carry all that stuff, even though it is a rolling three-day adventure. You'll stay each night in a different location. It is a hoot to do. It's beautiful roads, beautiful backcountry, sometimes trails, sometimes roads. In addition to that, the food is excellent because Scotty's son caters it, and he's actually a formerly trained chef who takes a little time off to come have fun with us. So you won't find any better food on a riding event.
Even if you don't want to go ride, it's a great opportunity to see the Ozarks. Scotty's Arkansas 500 actually supports the Turpentine Wildlife Refuge, and we had Scotty on for an interview just two or three weeks ago, so you can catch the entire story right out of Scotty's mouth by going to listen to our podcast.
Yeah, and that's another neat aspect of doing his ride. It starts out at Turpentine Creek Wildlife Refuge. If you've never heard those big lions roar up close, it is most impressive, I assure you.
Of course, it's a great opportunity to stay through the week, enjoy the Ozarks, and be at the Chase the Bunny Easter Bash at the Wilderness Rider Ranch the following weekend, which is Easter weekend.
That's right. You can make a 10-day, two-ride special out of it.
The Easter Bash on the Wilderness Rider Buffalo Ranch is actually April 13th through the 17th. That is a Thursday through a Monday. You can come for the entire weekend for one low price. You can come for just a single day if you want. So there are all sorts of options. You can catch the details at wildernessrider.com.
If you haven't already made your plans yet to attend, you better hop to it. Easter's on the way.
Isn't there a song like that? Or is that Santa's on his way? All right, so as we move through April, back here in Texas, MotoGP is April 21st through the 23rd. It is in Austin, Texas, so it's a well worth a weekend drive. And I was actually really surprised, Donnie. The tickets for a single day at MotoGP are just $39.
That's pretty low, it really is. That is a world-class event that you're watching, and the only place in Texas that you can watch it.
And a three-day general admission pass is just $89. So it's a great deal. I know that still gets a little expensive for your family, so leave the kids with the grandparents, and you and your wife go enjoy MotoGP.
Yeah, at $30 a day, that is hard to beat.
And then our bicycling buddies have another great event coming up at the end of April. The MS-150 from Houston to Austin is April 29th and 30th, and there is still room to register. A lot of times by this point in the year, you cannot even register for this event anymore, but I think they have upped the playing field to the point that registration is open. And the name is a little misleading. It says 150 miles. You end up a little closer to 170 miles, or at least that's what it was when I did it several years ago, by the time you actually land in Austin. But there is a synergy that you feel when you're in a group of riders, whether it is at a motorcycling event or a bicycling event, that is absolutely amazing. When you're in that big crowd of everybody getting ready to take off with the same cause, it's a really cool feeling.
I could dig being in the big crowd at the takeoff. It's after the 170 mile part that I don't think I'd be feeling this energy.
No, you may not be, although the finish line is really exciting up in Austin as well. It's very well supported. And if you don't want to ride, they do need volunteers. And they need volunteers of all types. So just hit the MS-150 site. You can Google MS-150 Houston, and it'll pop right up.
Well, I hope those finish line volunteers don't mind staying a couple days extra till I show up.
Now, MS is a disease that affects the central nervous system, and a lot of people are affected by it, and it actually hits more women than it does men. And there is a rider, a 49-year-old man, Paul Pelland, and Paul has MS. He was diagnosed a few years back, and before that, he was a very aggressive, competitive rider, so he's quit riding competitively now on motorcycles, but he is still riding, and his goal is to ride 1,000,000 miles and raise awareness for MS. So he's already 220,000 miles into this venture. He's raised $98,000 for the MS Society, and what's even cooler than that, he has given 200 inspirational presentations to people with MS, and that is his goal, is to inspire others to follow their passions no matter what life has thrown at them.
Way to go, Paul. That is super admirable.
It's called the MS 5000, and you can find Paul, his adventure, and even register to do 5,000 miles yourself at longhaulpaul.com. I think our next big adventure, we need to team it in with the MS 5000. What do you think, Donnie? I'm ready to go 5,000 miles again.
Would the TAT qualify?
The TAT would qualify. Well, the TAT would be a few miles short, but by the time you get to the beginning of the TAT and get back home from the end of the TAT, it sure would. And I believe that you're supposed to do 5,000 miles over 50 days. So yeah, the TAT would be real doable.
Well, that would definitely be a fun way to contribute. But whatever you're going to do, you better hurry, because if I'm not mistaken, it was April 1st through May 20th, the 50 days. And that would mean we are already 200 miles down on our route. So better get to ride. And better get to registering if you're going to do it.
The TAT, as you've heard us talk about in the past, is the Trans-America Trail. And I've talked to a lot of riders lately that are gearing up to start that in May.
I'm hearing a lot of buzz about it, too. I think the TAT is going to be quite busy this year.
Being able to ride a dirt path, road, trail, any variety of those, all the way across the country, or darn near all the way across the country, is really an exciting aspect for anybody on a dirt bike.
Yes, it certainly is. In the 21st century, that seems almost unfathomable.
So we just finished up rodeo season here in Houston, and it is such a big part of both Western and Texas tradition, and especially Houston tradition.
Yeah, the Houston rodeo is really unique in the fact that it is the only rodeo which you can actually go and participate without stepping in the ring and tussling a bull.
Yes, that is true. And I'm not ready to tussle a bull.
No, me neither, in fact.
I have enough trouble tussling a dirt bike.
But yeah, every other rodeo, you basically have two choices. You can get out there and be one of the participants in the arena, or you can sit up there in the seats and watch it all. The Houston rodeo, you can actually start as long as, I believe, 2 weeks out on the longest trail ride. and get to live that feel of riding the trail into town and coming in with the rodeo. And then you get to take a seat in the audience and watch the arena guys.
Yeah, Houston citizens really participate in this rodeo, both in spirit, in attendance, and in that amazing trail ride that sometimes clogs up our streets, but brings a real part of the Old West right into our town.
It does. There's a Go Texan flavor that permeates the city when the rodeo's going on and the wagons are rolling through town and everybody's stopped and watching and thinking, you know, I got to do that one of these years. That looks like a lot of fun.
Well, it is part of our heritage. And of course, it starts with our children as they're in grade school. They start to participate in art contests that are incorporated into the rodeo. And then it moves right on up into a lot of children raising livestock for the Fat Stock Show. I think it is such an amazing community event. And when you talk about one of the largest cities in the world, drawing in that type of community spirit where it's all united for one event, that's a really big deal.
It is. And while we're touching on the subject of kids, I don't know how many hundreds of millions of dollars they have generated to put kids through college now, but it is a wonderful program. And the best part about coming in on the trail ride is you're just in time for the barbecue cook-off.
Ooh, talk about something that's outdoors and on wheels. It would be all those barbecue pits.
I think the whole trail ride pretty much qualifies. You're either on wheels in the wagon or in the saddle on the ponies. And it's just another of the many great ways to get outdoors in Texas.
So next year, if you happen to be stuck in traffic while all of those amazing wagons and horses and their support that comes through our city streets, have a little bit of patience and remember what this event does for our entire community. You all have actually heard before from Joe Martin. He is our kind of roving correspondent who's been chasing the Dakar and doing a whole lot of adventure travel outside of the country. But right here at home, he is a native Houstonian, and right here at home, he's quite involved with the trail ride.
That's right. Every year, Joe crawls out of the saddle of his favorite bike and into the saddle of a horse or onto the wagon to visit with some of his buddies while they explore a little different flavor of outdoors with wheels.
What an interesting commentary that is for someone that might be out of the country on his motorcycle to make a point to fly back and be here. How important that is to him, how important it is to our community.
That's right. This year in particular, Joe dropped everything down in South America while he was chasing the Dakar rally so he could be sure to be back here in time for the Saltgrass Trail ride. You know, Joe's got a lot to tell us about going down there and chasing the Dakar rally, but I think right now I'd like to hear some of his stories about being on the Saltgrass Trail with the rodeo. I'm visiting with fellow Houstonian and motorcycle rider Joe Martin. Now, Joe usually does adventure rides out of the country, but for 1 week out of the year, he makes a point of trading in his motorcycle for a different kind of ride here in the Houston area.
I do. I've been riding the Saltgrass Trail Ride for, gosh, about 30 years now. For those that aren't familiar, the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, about 2 weeks before it begins, the trail rides ride into town just in time for the rodeo. The point being, as if these were ranchers bringing all their herds in for the cattle drive. Back in about 1952, I think, is when they originally did the Saltgrass Trail Ride. So it is the first. It is also the largest. It's about 1,500 riders now. Houston has, I want to say, about a dozen different trail rides that come in from every which direction. The Saltgrass comes in from Cat Springs, Texas, which is a little northwest of Sealy, Texas, about 90 miles out. So for 1 week, we ride 9 days. We leave on the Saturday before, pull into Memorial Park the following Friday, and then the next Saturday we ride in the downtown parade. And I'm proud to mention that our wagon, the Desperados, on the Saltgrass Trail, again, won the best looking wagon in the parade. So it's fun. It's a little different than riding adventure motorcycles in a clippity-clop and a little different group of people, but it's sure a good way to see Texas, see Houston, and get a little bit of that Texas flair.
And these trails actually follow the historic routes that the cattle drovers would have brought stock into town with. Is that correct?
Oh, I'd like to say that's true, but there weren't many roads back then. Maybe they were, but we're on asphalt most of the way, unfortunately. It is nice when we do get off-road earlier part of the ride when we're a little further out in the country, but most of it is on concrete and asphalt. It is fun on the Friday before the parade as we're coming into town. All the kids and all the schools are out and all dressed up in their Go Texan gear, and boy, they get excited when all these horses ride by.
Yeah, I know. When I was a kid, it was always fun to watch the Go Texan parade come by. Well, that kind of redefines outdoors on wheels, doesn't it?
Hey, we have wheels on the wagon. There's about 30 wagons on the ride, so there's plenty of wheels there. Plus, we have just our group, the Desperados, on the saltgrass. Our group has about 7 motorhomes, a cook shack, several trailers that pull hay and firewood and gear, a lot of other utility vehicles, and all that's just for one of the wagons on the saltgrass. So multiply that by about 30 and get a sense of how big this entourage is. And it's a pretty big endeavor. And if you look at it from the sky, you've got all these wagons, all these trail rides coming in on the Friday before the parade into Houston. You understand why there's traffic jams all over the place on that Friday. Not a good day to drive in Houston.
Better to be in the wagon enjoying it, isn't it?
With a cold one.
Yeah, I'm not so sure that the original people riding in on the trails exactly had cold beer with them.
Wouldn't be cold anyway.
I can remember when I first moved to Houston, probably about 35 years ago, there were two things that you learned really fast about the Houston area, and that was Love You Blue, and that was all about the history behind the rodeo and just the general enthusiasm when rodeo hit town. As a business person now in the Houston area, I can tell you that business slows down during rodeo season for many normal businesses because of all of the focus on the rodeo.
Well, yeah, and so many of the people that run businesses are in the committee, and that just absorbs a lot of their time. Yeah, for about a month out of the year, everything becomes rodeo. Yeah, thank goodness for it. I mean, that and the art car parade, I think, are the two things that really put Houston on the map.
Well, and it keeps such a great Western tradition alive. And the feel of it is so much more than if it were just a rodeo event, that if you weren't particularly interested in calf roping or bronc busting, you wouldn't necessarily be as involved. But when it's right on the streets, coming down the highways, coming all around and drawing attention, of course, the schools play into it. It's a big part of our heritage.
Oh, it is. And we're not faking it. It's, we're city slickers, most of us. That's for sure. But make no bones about it, it's a real ride. Cattle call 6 a.m. We get up, water our horses, put our saddles on, be all lined up, ready to pull out by about 8 o'clock and, you know, ride hard for about 2/3 of the day. And that's when the work stops. Take your saddle off, water your horse, and that's when you hit the cooler and somebody's going to have a party that night. And it's going to be country music. And it's all Western wear. No logos, no camouflage, no contemporary clothing. Everybody's in boots, hats, and jeans and looking like about a couple hundred years ago.
How many years have you been doing this, Joe?
I started in 1992, and I participate in some way every year. My goal is always to ride the whole week, but that hadn't happened in a while. I rode only a couple of days this year, but it'll always be part of my life. That wagon is really my second family. We spend a lot of time with each other throughout the year.
So, Donnie, your perspective, you grew up, you were born here in the Houston area. How old were you when you first remember the Houston Rodeo?
Oh, gosh, it's been an ongoing affair since I was first having memories. And we always talked about going and doing one of the big wagon rides on one of the trails, and we never got around to it. And I got to say, I always wish that we would have. I was always envious of those folks that were riding in on the horses and riding in the wagons.
Today's your lucky day. The key to riding in a trail ride is knowing somebody that does it and gets you in. And here you go.
Aha. Uh-huh. May finally get to fulfill that dream.
Well, I love that idea. I haven't been on horseback in a few decades. That would be so much fun. There's something about parades in general, when they encompass this many people and when they represent the spirit of a city, the way the trail rides do coming into rodeo, I can't think of a better place to be.
The best place to be on the back of a horse or in the wagon. As I said earlier, it's if you have an opportunity to do it, it's certainly a bucket list thing, but, you know, being from Texas, to be able to participate in a trail ride that rides into the rodeo, I don't even go to the rodeo anymore. It's just the trail ride for me. It's the real deal. You're really riding a horse, and it's a lot of fun.
Do they have a horse that's kind of the equivalent of like a 85cc?
Oh, yeah, they've got them in all CCs and all types, and there's always the buggy.
Good. I think I'm going to start out on one of those low-performance models.
I don't believe you. Just put him on a wild one. He's going to, I don't think he knows slow.
Just go ahead and give me old YZ.
Yeah, it's motorcycle guys usually end up on the spirited horses.
The great outdoors, a set of wheels, and you, the three, are destined to dance. Outdoors with Wheels continues on KPRC 950.
The trail is calling. Every turn, hill, and fallen log is screaming your name, and you're ready because you have the right type of power and agility to answer the call. Introducing the 2016 Honda Pioneer 1000, available at Cycle Shack North. It sports a best-in-class 999cc engine and the industry's only 6-speed fully automatic dual-clutch transmission. And with 27-inch tires and well over a foot of ground clearance, the Pioneer 1000 gets you places other side-by-sides can't. Plus, with the Pioneer 1005, Honda's exclusive quick flip seats can go from a 3-seater to a 5-seater in seconds. So, no matter what your family is into, hunting, fishing, trail riding, you can do it all and more. Head on down to Cycle Shack North in Conroe and check out a new Honda Pioneer 1000. And don't forget to go big with our huge selection of quality Honda accessories. For your safety, read the owner's manual, wear a helmet and eye protection, always wear your seatbelt, and keep the side nets and doors closed. Pioneers are for drivers 16 years and older.
Finding out what's wrong with your vehicle is simple and convenient at Beckwith's Car Care. Their ASC-certified technicians and professionally trained advisors will help you understand your vehicle and keep it safe and dependable. For everything from oil changes to a new engine, from tire rotations to a check engine light, visit Beckwith's Car Care. Call 281-446-4000. They're on FM 1960, just east of Highway 59. 281-446-4000. Proud sponsor and co-host of the Auto Mojo Show on AM 950 KPRC.
Attention all outdoor adventurers, the wilderness is calling, Wilderness Rider Ranch that is.
In the rolling mountains of northern Arkansas, the sun lights fire in the sky every morning as the forest wakes up for an adventurous day at the Wilderness Rider Buffalo Ranch and OHV Park.
Just a day's drive from all the hustle, bustle, and madness of the big city, the Wilderness Rider Buffalo Ranch directly adjoins the Buffalo National River Park in the beautiful Boxley Valley Headwaters region, and it is bookended on the west side by the Sweden Creek Nature Preserve. It is some fantastic, one-of-a-kind natural property.
From hiking and mountain biking, climbing, or even off-road exploration on your dirt bike, your dual sport, ATV, side-by-side, or Jeep. Whether you camp by pristine waterfalls and unique natural wonders or enjoy more civilized lodging, your experience while exploring the Wilderness Rider Buffalo Ranch and OHV Park will create memories which last a lifetime. Start your magical vacation at WildernessRider.com.
We are screaming through the valley where the Nishnabotna flows, through the mud and crud and cornfields where the marijuana grows, across the railroad tracks of Persia, down the hills and up the dale, past CJ5 with a four-wheel drive and Smokey on my tail.
Two wheels or four, it doesn't matter. It's all about enjoying the outdoors. Get your tires dirty with Lynn and Donnie as Outdoors with Wheels continues on KPRC 950.
I'm out here today looking at a beautiful repainted Harley Davidson that belongs to John Miller, a name you'll probably recognize and certainly a voice you'll recognize from the Auto Mojo show. And John, you've been a motorcycle rider since before you were even working on cars, I'm thinking.
That's true. I started riding when I was 15, and that's more years ago than I'd like to admit. And this little Harley we're looking at today is one I bought about 6 months ago. And let's see, it was black. I mean, that's all I can say about it, is it was black from the front wheel to the back. And I got a little bored with it, so I gave it to my paint shop, and I said, do something spiffy, and you can see what they did. Now, you can take a motorcycle just about any place and get it painted, but if you want it painted right, you need to be real careful about where you go. The people that are going to take it apart properly, make sure they take everything loose, everything off of it, handle it with care while they're painting it, do the paint job right, and then reassemble it right. And the boys in the paint shop here did all of that for me.
Well, they did an outstanding job, and there is no detail left untouched.
Well, the here we're talking about is Freedom Automotive in Stafford, Texas on Murphy Road. And there are a whole lot of paint shops that won't paint a motorcycle in the first place. So a lot of your quality, some of the best paint shops in the Houston area won't touch a motorcycle. So to find one that has all of that quality going for it, that cares about what happens, and truly does a classic, full-on custom paint job that will still do a motorcycle, that's quite special, John.
And they do it in a timely manner, which is even more unusual.
Yeah, I think the reason a lot of paint shops don't want to deal with it is because people who love their bikes enough to invest in a custom paint job are pretty particular, and you can't get away with cutting corners. Now, this paint job started out, as I said, the bike was black. We repainted that in a metallic black base, then highlighted all the flames on it in an Orion silver, Then put 5 coats of Candy Apple Red over it from House of Colors. Each coat, in between each coat of paint, it's all buffed out, sanded where it needs to be, and then the next coat goes on. You did that with 5 coats of candy, and then 3 coats of clear on top of that. And what you end up with is an awesome-looking kind of black cherry red, Candy Apple Red, flamed out Harley Davidson. It looks really good going down the road.
Yeah, in the sunlight, these flames look like they're just dancing underneath all that clear.
So many people get used to a manufacturer's paint job, which is far from perfect. It's definitely not a custom job, whether you're driving a car or whether you're on a motorcycle. A lot of times there's inconsistencies in the paint texture, but overall it looks basically shiny, so it's fine for a production vehicle. But when you start talking custom and all that clear, that's where you get that mirror shine. You get all of the depth where the color's actually buried underneath the clear itself. There's really a magic to it. And Candy Apple paint is one of the most classic paint jobs.
Yes, it is. It's been around since the hot rod days of the 50s. But, you know, Candy Apple's not cheap. The Orion clear is not cheap. You end up with a lot of material in this, and then you end up with a lot of labor time. My painter spent 90 hours on this motorcycle from start to finish. So it ends up being a fairly expensive paint job. But if you've got a classic bike and you want it to look really sharp, you want to be something different out there, it might be worth the investment.
You know, seeing that bike before when it was just, I won't say it was an ugly bike, but it was just so mundane and normal looking. And now it just jumps out at you. I would say that was money well spent.
Well, one of the things I noticed was that when we saw the bike before it was painted, the chrome was all on it at that point, but I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to the chrome. Whereas with the Candy Apple paint job and just the absolute luster of the entire bike, you really recognize how much chrome is on the bike, which you've already talked a little bit about, but getting all of that chrome off before it's painted, getting it all back on properly without any damage to anything on the bike, that takes a professional too.
It does, and you're one of the best tools in modern technology is your cell phone camera. And even technicians who have spent years and years taking this stuff apart and putting it back together, we take pictures of it as we go apart so that we've got everything documented. Any missing screws, bolts, nuts, fasteners, you know, we know where they were missing and we know what to get to replace them as we go back together. It's really a work of art, a work of love. It's something special, and we really enjoy doing it. And, you know, Freedom Automotive's been out here 30 years now. We've got a great reputation for quality paint jobs, and we're not afraid at all to paint your motorcycle for you.
And they will do one fantastic job, I can promise you.
So tell us a little bit about the motorcycle itself. What type of Harley, what year?
It's a 2013 Harley Ultra Glide Classic, 103 cubic inch engine. Got 40,000 miles on it now. It's just a great road bike, great all-around road bike.
Now, what if I had a brand new Gixxer or some sort of a cafe racer, something that I just really wanted to take to a meetup and have it stand out from all the other production bikes? Does it have to be a classic for Freedom Automotive to tackle it?
You bring your motorcycle and your imagination, sit down and talk with my body shop manager and my painter, and then come back in, you know, 2 weeks to a month and pick up your motorcycle, and it will be just what you wanted.
Now, what kind of time frame would be involved? Say someone had a small collision, needed some of the exterior components on their bike replaced, and indeed painted to match the rest of the bike again. Is there, I know it varies, of course, with every job and its complexity, but that would be a much faster situation.
In most cases, the parts are readily available for all the popular motorcycle styles, so we can pick up what we need in most cases, get it painted if we're going back to match the factory paint. It's no real big trick. Depending on how bad it was, you know, you can be out here in a week to 2 weeks back on the road riding again.
Or you can look in a whole lot better than you were before riding again.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you should save the pennies and go for the custom job because you cannot compare a stock paint job to the custom job we're seeing on your Harley, John.
Thank you, Lynn. I'm real proud of it. It came out looking very nice. And it's no longer a drab motorcycle. It's now one of a kind.
Yeah, it certainly is. That was quite a transformation. Congratulations on a job. Very well done.
Well, while we're on the subject of paint, as we walked into the shop and were gawking over your Harley, we walked past a Catalina convertible. Tell us a little bit about that, because you don't have to just consider Freedom Automotive for your motorcycle work. You can do it for all sorts of automotive finishes.
That Catalina came to us a while back, part of it on a tow truck and the rest of it in 3 pickup truck loads. From the firewall forward, there was nothing. from the whole interior was gutted. There was absolutely nothing inside of it. The owner has furnished us with everything, and we've reassembled it, repainted it, just did a complete rebuild on this car, and it is gorgeous. A 68 Pontiac Catalina convertible. We did convert it to fuel injection so that it could be more drivable for the customer, but it turned out to be a really nice project, and he's been really happy with it.
Well, I'm glad it happened to be here on the day we were here. I'd heard about it previously, but I'd never gotten to see it, and it is truly a beautiful car. And I hope everybody heard that Freedom Automotive converted the fuel system delivery on this vehicle to fuel injection. So that means that you can have the dependability in a classic car. So when you're looking at your restoration work, you maybe have a vehicle that doesn't need paint restoration but could use some mechanical help, Freedom Automotive is a great choice for that as well. So my paint knowledge is somewhat limited, but I do remember an old Volkswagen Bug that I had that was painted a base coat of yellow and then had a pearl over top of it. And when you start layering paint, there is, we mentioned before, a magic to it, but there's a depth and a charm that you get that makes your vehicle very unique, very individualized. And really, when you get it out in the sun, there's nothing better.
It is kind of magical, the chemistry of all that paint, the way one color laid on top of another, laid on top of another. The sun will bring out highlights and radiance in it that you don't see with any single color paint.
Now, I've heard some lesser shops try to insinuate that they might be able to do something like this with graphic stickers. I don't think that's anywhere near possible. What do you say about that?
Well, I mean, you could put stickers of SpongeBob SquarePants on there, I guess, if you wanted to. But yeah, laying graphics out with appliques, vinyl appliques and stuff, that's okay. But I mean, that's not what you want to do to the motorcycle you love.
Well, I would absolutely agree. Now, if you're decorating a vehicle to advertise your business, the vinyl graphics are fine. They're only going to last typically for, somewhere between 3 and 8 years, depending on where you store it and how you drive it. And even from day one, it's not going to be the beautiful paint job that you can do when you actually use paint. Now, something we haven't mentioned yet was the custom pinstriping that we've seen on a couple vehicles around here.
Yeah, on what we call the Cinderella truck. This one started out as a farm truck, been on a farm for 12 years. Got attacked by wild gate posts and rampaging cows and all kinds of stuff. There wasn't a panel on it without a dent in it. We repainted it in the body shop, come out looking really nice. And then Mike from Stripes by Mike came out and laid the pinstriping on it for us, and that really accented it and made it stand out like something special.
Well, and when you run your fingers over the pinstripes, yes, I was touching your truck, there's no change in the surface of the paint, so there must be clear coat on top of the pinstripes?
Well, only if you want them to last. Yes. We do clear over them to protect them. That protects them from the ultraviolet damage from the sun and from just normal weathering. Makes them last a lot longer, look better for a longer period of time.
Well, whether it's the pinstriping details, whether it's the multiple coats of paint with all of the prep and sanding that goes on in between, I hope everybody is hearing what an absolute craftsman-style job happens here at Freedom Automotive, whether it's a paint job on your old farm truck, whether it's a paint job on your favorite motorcycle, or for that matter, if it's a mechanical repair. So do indeed remember Freedom Automotive in Stafford, Texas on Murphy Road. And I bet there's a phone number that I don't remember properly.
Well, most people have a hard time with phone numbers, but just remember freedomauto.com. That's freedomauto.com.
They are the automotive shop that speaks fluent motorcycle.
The great outdoors, a set of wheels, and you, the three, are destined to dance. Outdoors with Wheels continues on KPRC 950.
Any mechanic, woodworker, or craftsman knows the right tools make the job a whole lot easier. And Honda's 4-Trax Rancher line of ATVs are premium tools for the jobs you need to do. Whether that's on the farm, the job site, hunting, fishing, exploring, or on the ranch, you can see the whole Rancher line at Cycle Shack North. It's easy for you to choose the right mix of Rancher features, just like reaching for that right tool. Every Rancher starts with the same proven Honda engine, the heart of any ATV. A 420cc liquid-cooled, single-cylinder design with fuel injection that's engineered for the kind of wide, low-revving power power an ATV rider wants. And it offers something no other ATV can, Honda's legendary reliability and efficiency. After that, the mix and match of features is up to you. They have models with independent rear suspension for excellent handling and a superior ride. They also have swing arm models suited to riders who tow a lot. So head on down to Cycle Shack North in Conroe and check out the new 2017 Honda 4-Track Rancher lineup. Shouldn't all life's choices be that easy? Honda recommends a Rancher for riders 16 years old and older and recommends that all ATV riders take a training course.
Finding out what's wrong with your vehicle is simple and convenient at Beckwith's Car Care. Their ASC-certified technicians and professionally trained advisors will help you understand your vehicle and keep it safe and dependable. For everything from oil changes to a new engine, from tire rotations to a check engine light, visit Beckwith's Car Care. Call 281-446-4000. They're on FM 1960, just east of Highway 59. 281-446-4000. Proud sponsor and co-host of the Auto Mojo Show on AM 950 KPRC.
Attention all outdoor adventurers, the wilderness is calling. Wilderness Rider Ranch, that is.
In the rolling mountains of northern Arkansas, the sun lights fire in the sky every morning as the forest wakes up for an adventurous day at the Wilderness Rider Buffalo Ranch and OHV Park.
Just a day's drive from all the hustle, bustle, and madness of the big city, the Wilderness Rider Buffalo Ranch directly adjoins the Buffalo National River Park in the beautiful Boxley Valley Headwaters region, and it is bookended on the west side by the Sweden Creek Nature Preserve. It is some fantastic, one-of-a-kind natural property.
From hiking and mountain biking, climbing, or even off-road exploration on your dirt bike, your dual sport, ATV, side-by-side, or Jeep. Whether you camp by pristine waterfalls and unique natural wonders or enjoy more civilized lodging, your experience while exploring the Wilderness Rider Buffalo Ranch and OHV Park will create memories which last a lifetime. Start your magical vacation at wildernessrider.com.
We are screaming through the valley where the nation of botany flows, through the mud and crud and cornfields where the marijuana grows, across the railroad tracks of Persia, down the hills and up the dale. That's CJ5 with a four-wheel drive, Smokey on my tail.
Two wheels or four, it doesn't matter. It's all about enjoying the outdoors. Get your tires dirty with Lynn and Donnie as Outdoors with Wheels continues on KPRC 950.
Welcome back. Thanks for sharing part of your weekend with Outdoors with Wheels.
On last week's show, we were speaking with Steve Willis, a adventure rider from Canada who was on an adventure down through South America. After going through South America, Steve also went over and did a little riding in Cuba. And today, we're going to visit a little bit about some of his reflections from that Cuba trip on a motorcycle.
Yeah, he had a really exciting journey. When he was finishing up in South America, he came up to Cartagena and loaded his bike on a sailboat, the Stallrat, in Cartagena, and actually went into Jamaica for a couple of weeks, and then on to Cuba and got to spend an entire month in Cuba.
Man, oh man, being an international adventure rider sure sounds like a tough gig, doesn't it?
It sounds like a blast, other than the seasick part on the sailboat.
Well, in addition to having a heck of a good time riding through Cuba, he came back with a lot of interesting insights about the people and the culture as well.
Now, I've heard that Cubans only make about $20 a month, and that's inconceivable for budgets that we live on here in America for us to understand how they do it. How did it feel to be in a communist country like Cuba, and how were the people? Were they happy?
Well, that's a good question, and probably one that's hard for me to answer. On the surface, there doesn't seem to be, you don't even really notice it. I just felt honored that we were allowed to take our motorcycles and offload them there. You know, I don't think that's been going on for that long.
No, it hasn't.
Where they've allowed that to happen. But, you know, I'm glad that they did, because it gives us a glimpse into their world. The system there, it doesn't matter. You could be a doctor or you could be a taxi cab driver. You still get paid the same. You're all treated the same under their system. So, and when they tell you that they make the equivalent of $20 US, that's true, they get a bit of cash from the government, but what they don't tell you is that they have free education. If you go to university, they'll actually pay you extra to go to university there.
So they value education.
They value education very much.
But when you get this education, it doesn't necessarily mean you're more successful, at least not monetarily.
No, that's for sure. Some of the things that I found out while I was in Cuba was school teachers, for example, if you take the entire population, which I think is in the neighborhood of 11 million people, if you divide that by 45, that's how many school teachers there are in Cuba.
That's a lot. There's one school teacher for every 45 individuals. We have classes that are bigger than that.
Yeah, and that's not students.
No, that's the entire population.
And for doctors, the number is somewhere between 145 and 150. So every 150 people of the entire population, there's a doctor. And I found it very strange because I stayed at Casa Particulares, which are basically people's homes that have been sanctioned by the government and licensed to provide, to allow them to rent their rooms out to tourists.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it very, very common that the owner, the dad, you know, because they're all, their families, right? The dad would be like a professor in mathematics and the mom would be, you know, a university teacher of sociology or psychology. The people there are highly, highly educated. But when you look at their standard of living, it all seems kind of out of skew. Somebody here in the United States or in Canada that was a professor of mathematics
would have a different standard of living, a different income base.
There's probably a pretty good chance he'd be driving around in a Mercedes.
Right.
You know, or
not a modified 50s Oldsmobile.
Well, often they didn't have a vehicle.
Yeah.
That was another thing. Cuba, a lot of people, the exposure that they get to Cuba is in the resort areas, you know, the tourist areas.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the rural areas, and people don't have cars. If there's no need for them to have cars, the government doesn't allow them to have cars.
Ah.
So it's quite common that somebody who lives in that town, for example, Sorora, where I stayed, they had never been out to the coast, which was 80 kilometers away.
Because they had no transportation to do so.
Yeah, they just don't
travel.
It's a
long walk. Yeah.
And they don't have the money for it either. But, you know, the government provides them also with their basic foodstuffs. The power and things like that are subsidized.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you had a referendum, if they allowed them to have a referendum to vote, I think they would all vote that they'd want to keep communism there because they are provided with everything that they need. And family is very, very important there to them. And they spend a lot of time with their families. It's a different culture than in America, North America. Seem like we're all about working and getting things. People at our age trying to set up for retirement. And,
right.
And we're really
consumed
and focused on that, where the people really in all the Latin cultures are more focused on family. It's not uncommon to have grandma and grandpa and, you know, the whole family living in the same place.
I believe at some point ages ago, that was pretty common in America. And it's a shame that our families have become so fractured. It sounds like we have a good lesson to learn from the Latin culture.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. And getting back to Cuba, there's some things that are not very nice there that I did not like, is that I found that the people, because there was no incentive to work harder,
mm-hmm.
I found them very lazy.
I bet.
They're not willing to go the extra mile because, well, frankly, there's nothing more in it for them.
Now, and they had food to eat. I know you told me this earlier. They had food to eat, but when you would stay at a Casa Particular, so you're in their home and it's dinner time, you could purchase a meal from them.
Yeah.
And you would eat separately.
Yeah, they always insisted that you eat separately.
And the food was significantly different. What they fed you, maybe were even required to feed you as a tourist that the government mandated they feed you, was different than what the children and the family ate.
Yeah, it was kind of shocking to me. I wanted to be part of their family. I was living in their house. Once in a while, I would buy some ice cream. I would bring enough ice cream for the whole family.
Oh, I bet they were thrilled.
And they thought it was pretty cool. And I thought, like, we could all sit down and eat together, and then for dessert we'd have ice cream. But they always insisted that you ate separately, and they would cook these gorgeous meals. You know, you have your choice of meat. There would be salad. There'd be fruit juice. There'd be a glass of wine. There'd be rice. There'd be beans. Like, way more food than you could eat. Enough for two or three people. Finally, one day I went down after I had eaten, and I would get up and pick my dishes up and take them to the kitchen, and they'd be like insulted because that was part of the
deal. You were being served.
Yeah, so they didn't really like that. But I went down later when the family was eating, and I found that they were eating rice and beans.
So the staples that they receive are limited.
Yeah, so having some pork or some beef or chicken, I mean, they ate it for sure. So the excess meat and stuff that I had, especially the meat, I would give to the children, and they'd gobble it up. I found it kind of odd, but that's how it was there, you know. They would feed you better than they fed themselves.
Well, it's noble that they did that. It makes you wonder if there was a requirement for that or if it was just a service attitude. But it certainly is a huge statement of what living under communism is actually like.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some things that are very concerning. I mean, we in North America, we value our freedom. And in Cuba, they have freedom, but it's within boundaries.
Well, next time all of you are going to complain because you have to have some regulations or maybe pay registration on your vehicle, remember that you did not have to get the government's permission to buy that vehicle. All they're doing is charging you a licensing fee. So In reality, we become a little complacent and we don't realize how different other parts of the world are.
Yes, we're very fortunate how we live in North America, but that doesn't mean that we couldn't learn some things from the Latino culture. And I think the big thing would be the family and how important it is in their cultures, that family is everything. And I think in North America, we've kind of moved away from that. And
sadly so, yeah.
It's more of a consumer world and, you know, keeping up with the Joneses. So it was a real contrast from the life that I was used to in Northern Alberta to what I've seen in many of the countries in Central and South America, and in fact, the Caribbean.
So as you left Cuba, you're back on the Stall Rat, and Antonio Braga is there. We mentioned him a little bit earlier. What an interesting fellow he is. At 80 some odd years old, he has been riding his motorcycle for decades, and there was some history behind that I have forgotten.
Okay, well, he's a fascinating man, so much so that when we landed back in Mexico, I was felt compelled to go back to Oaxaca and to visit with him. I stayed in his house for a couple of days with him and his son. I got to see the family albums and hear his story, and he was the second man to ever cross the Darien Gap on a motorcycle. The first man was an American, Robert Cuthbertson. They were good friends, and Rob Cuthbertson wrote a book about his journey across the Darien Gap, and he felt compelled to travel to Oaxaca, Mexico, and sign a book and dedicate it to Antonio and give it to them. I seen the book. Antonio was the second man to do that. Because there is no road, it's more of a trail, you'd have to hire a crew of men to help you. Antonio crossed on a 1,000cc BMW.
Oh my goodness, that's a big bike, and that's basically a swamp, isn't it?
Yes, there was pictures of where they loaded the bike into a homemade dugout canoe, and they were paddling it across these swamps or pushing it through the swampy areas. I found out that Antonio actually has made 7 different, separate, distinct trips to South America. He has 2 Harley Davidsons. I'm hoping my memory serves me correct. 3 of his trips on a Harley Davidson, 1 on a BMW, 1 on what we call a tuk-tuk, which is sort of a 3-wheeled taxi with a cab.
Mm-hmm.
But he'd made a bed in there, and he'd actually traveled all down through South America on this tuk-tuk. It's incredible, you know, 250cc.
So he didn't go fast, but he got everywhere he wanted to go.
He got everywhere, and he had his house with him.
Yeah.
There was a little bed in the back, and it would keep you dry. And then he had a Vespa, 110cc Vespa, where he went to South America on that. A little scooter, yep.
Yeah, no, he didn't cross the Darien Gap on the little scooter.
No, only on the BMW. He did that once.
I think once would be enough for anybody.
And, you know, keep in mind that that was in 1989 when he did the Darien Gap. And Antonio was 80 years old today.
Oh.
So he wasn't a young man when he went through, you know, nearly, what was that, 30 years ago, pretty close now. So he was like 50 years old when he went through the Darien Gap.
Well, we preach a lot on Outdoors with Wheels that it doesn't matter what your age, whether you have a 3-year-old child that you're wanting to expose to the wilderness and the outdoors, or whether you're 40, 50, 60, and now is that we're talking about Antonio, 70 or 80 years old, there is such adventure waiting for you. Quit wasting time in front of the television set.
Yeah, that's good advice, Lynn.
Now, you came back up through Mexico. We're so fortunate that you visited us here in Texas again. And from Texas, you're going to spend some time in the southern U.S.?
Yes, I've always wanted to do that. I'm really looking forward to swinging along the Gulf Coast and heading east towards maybe Florida. And part of that is I'm anxious to get home, but it's pretty cold in Canada right now, and I can't go up there for a while, but it's nice to be in the States. It's nice to be in an English-speaking country. It's a wonderful place, and I'm hoping to really experience a lot of what the Deep South in the U.S. has to offer.
Well, I think it has a lot to offer, and I hope everybody heard one of the key words you said just a moment ago, the word maybe. And it's not that Steve is not completely committed to his travels. He is, obviously. If you've been listening to this story, you know that he will go most anywhere and loves the experience. But the word maybe plays into where he goes next, how long he stays there, and that flexibility has given you such a great experience and really enriched your life with the people you've met.
It's true, Lynn. The people are the highlight of the trip for sure. I mean, I've seen some beautiful, beautiful places. I've been at 6,000 meters above sea level, which is, I think, somewhere around 20 or 22,000 feet above sea level. I've seen jungles. I've seen beautiful beaches, archipelagos, so many different things. But, you know, the people are the things that always stand out. And there's nice people everywhere you go. I love to ride my motorcycle. When I'm on there, I think you said it, I'm like a Cheshire cat. I got a big smile on my face. The scenery's rolling by. I just can't wait because I know that there's going to be people that I'm going to run into and interact with and hear their stories, and they'll hear my stories. And it's just such a fulfilling thing at this point in my life to get to do that. So,
well, I am hopeful that as you journey back west, I know that the West Coast, California, and heading up perhaps Highway 1 are on your list as well. I'm hoping we intercept you here in Texas. And of course, we will bother you to help our listeners learn more about your journeys through Florida and the American South as well.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's been a pleasure, and it's been a real experience getting out and traveling and casting away some of the inhibitions that I had and opening up my eyes to the great big world that's out there.
So whether you want to do it hiking, climbing, on a motorcycle, in an RV, go buy a giant Winnebago, I don't care. Get yourself outside and away from the couch and the television.
Exactly.
Thanks so much for visiting with us, Steve.
Thanks for having me.
We focus so much on the act of riding when we're out on our bikes here in the United States. So much of it is skill development, especially if you're riding in the dirt. If you're a motocrosser, then certainly you're always practicing different skills and turns and jumps. Talking to Steve, it really brings back just the absolute joy of the travel possibilities on a motorcycle.
Yeah, you're right. Here in the States, so many of us do tend to lose focus on the sheer bliss of traveling on two wheels.
When you're riding down the road, there are smells, sights, sounds that you experience in such a different way when you're on a motorcycle than when you're in an alternate vehicle. You're more in touch with your environment. I love riding through a small town and picking a restaurant based on the aroma wafting through the wind.
That's probably about as good a way to pick a restaurant as there is, truthfully.
There are also many times when you're riding through different forested areas where certain scents, say jasmine or honeysuckle, will become very evident.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to ride through any kind of true outdoor nature because you do get the sense of what you're riding through.
And you feel like you're more a part of it, too.
Oh, absolutely.
And on top of your personal experience, when you travel on a motorcycle, you're much more open to meeting other people. As you pull into small towns, someone's much more likely to come up and say hi, ask how you are. And it even transcends just the camaraderie between other motorcyclists. Other travelers in general seem to become a lot more involved with your travels.
Yeah, that's very true. You just are so much more accessible when you're on a bike, and it seems to translate through to the people who are around you.
Well, I know Steve certainly spoke a lot about the people that he met. If you missed last week's episode of Outdoors with Wheels, be sure to go to our podcast. We had a long talk with Steve about some of the other countries he's visited. Thanks to our special guests this week, both Joe Martin and Steve Willis. We had quite a long talk with Joe Martin a few episodes back as he set off to chase the Dakar.
That's right. And next week, we're going to visit a little more with Joe and hear some reflections on his South America trip, where Joe not only chased, but at times found himself riding right along with the Dakar.
It was an exciting trip for Joe, and I know you're going to love hearing about it. So we'll see you next week. Happy riding, everybody.
Happy four-wheeling.
Outdoors with Wheels has Lynn and Donnie bring you another informative and entertaining show. Thank you for listening. Now, head into the great outdoors. Get those tires dirty and get your mind right. Go out.